Now, I don't know how many of you read the Morning Star, but earlier this year in May, there was a letter, and it was headed, "Star must beware of the pitfalls of martyrism." So this is obviously a current issue that's being discussed by everybody. But their complaint was that because the Morning Star was having articles on gardening and cooking, this was blatant martyrism. Well, I can announce to you that the Socialist Standard doesn't have articles on cooking and gardening. So by that criteria, we're not Mensheviks either, or Martovists either. Now, who was Martov? Now, he was born Yuli Sederbaum in Constantinople in 1873. He was the son of a Russified Jew, which I mean by that, people of Jewish origin that didn't practice the Jewish religion. Now, the family moved to Odessa, which is now in Ukraine, when he was four. Now, the Tsarist state was openly anti-Semitic and imposed limits on the number of Jews who could be admitted to university. Martov did get in, but he was soon expelled for anti-Tsarist activity, and he became a Marxist in 1892 and an activist in the Russian Social Democratic Movement. Now, as such, he suffered the things which others in this movement suffered, such as imprisonment, deportation to Siberia, and exile in Western Europe. Now, he adopted the name Martov in 1901, and it's from the Russian word for March, because he reckoned that March was the month in which the revolutions broke out, like the Paris Commune had in 1871. Now, he and Lenin were the main animators of the journal Ispra, which campaigned for a single, centralised, all-Russia Social Democratic Workers' Party. However, they fell out over the degree of centralisation at the Second Congress of the Social Democratic Party, Russian Social Democratic Party, over this issue. Now, Lenin wanted an elite party of elite and highly centralised party of professional revolutionaries. Martov wanted a broader party, not quite as broad as this letter writer in the Morning Star claims. It says, "Martov tried to change the party from an organisation of professional revolutionaries to a broad, flexible party that any Tom, Dick or Harry could join." I think that's a bit of an exaggeration of his position. I mean, Lenin won the argument, or won the vote, and the famous Bolshevik-Menshevik split took place. Now, Martov's criticism of the Leninist-Bolshevik position was essentially the same as others at the same time. For instance, Rosa Luxemburg and, at that time, Trotsky. Basically, it was that this idea owed more to the Jacobins of the French Revolution than it did to Marx. Now, both the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks agreed that the coming revolution in Russia could only be a bourgeois revolution. A bourgeois revolution in the sense of a revolution that, through the establishment of a democratic republic, would free capitalist economic development in Russia from the shackles of semi-feudal czarism. But the difference was over who should lead this revolution. The Mensheviks tended to favour leaving it to the bourgeoisie itself, with the Workers' Party giving critical support. The Bolsheviks envisaged it being carried out by workers and peasants under the leadership of their party, or a party of professional revolutionaries. Now, when the First World War broke out, Martov immediately opposed it as an imperialist war on both sides, and he was living at the time, like Lenin, in exile in Western Europe. Now, after the overthrow of the Tsar in March 1917, he returned to Russia, and he was appalled to find that some Mensheviks were prepared to join, and did join, the provisional government And worse, they supported its policy of continuing participation in the slaughter that was the First World War. Meanwhile, Lenin and the Bolsheviks were gaining ground under their slogan of land, peace, and bread. And eventually, they won enough support in the Petrograd Soviet to overthrow the provisional government in November and to take power for themselves. Now, Martov wasn't against the overthrow of the provisional government, but he wanted it to be replaced by a coalition of all the left-wing parties rather than by a dictatorship of the Bolshevik Party. Now, even though Martov supported the Bolshevik government in the Civil War, this didn't prevent the persecution of the Mensheviks. And he left Russia in 1920 and died in Germany in 1923, aged 50. The following year, Lenin died, aged 54, which to me is quite young, in fact. So, I mean, these people seem to die earlier than they should have done. Now, if you want to know any details of Martov's life, it's in this book here by Israel Getzler, Martov, A Political Biography of a Russian Social Democrat, that came out in 1968. Anyway, what was his criticism of Bolshevism? His writings were unknown in the English-speaking world until the publication in 1938 in America of a collection of articles he'd written between 1919 and 1923. Now, the original title had been World Bolshevism, but the translator dropped one of the articles and changed the title to the State and the Socialist Revolution. Now, this revealed Martov to be, if I can borrow a term from Paul Matic, an anti-Bolshevik Marxist, alongside other people such as, for instance, Anton Panikuk or Otto Ruhl. Though unlike them, he was never for one moment taken in by any of the Bolshevik claims, and he was writing as much more of an orthodox Marxist in the tradition of the left wing of the Social Democratic movement before the First World War, from which, incidentally, the Socialist Party is descended. Now, his criticism of Bolshevism was threefold. First, their conception of the dictatorship of the proletariat as literally a dictatorship. Second, that they envisaged this dictatorship being exercised by a minority. And thirdly, that their attempt to establish socialism when conditions in Russia were then not ripe for this. Now, in this pamphlet, Martov quotes a passage that Engels wrote in 1895 about the time for revolutions led by conscious minorities at the head of unconscious masses being over. And he says that the Bolsheviks did not accept this, but had regressed to the position which Engels had said had become outdated. Now, the Bolshevik argument, on the other hand, was that the mass of workers were so downtrodden and so brainwashed that the majority in favour of socialism would never emerge as long as capitalist rule lasted. So it was therefore, according to them, the duty of the minority of conscious communists to seize state power and seize state power from the capitalist class and end capitalist rule and use it to decontaminate, as it were, and re-educate the masses. And this done, then communism could be introduced. So if you like, what the Bolsheviks stood for was dictatorship of a minority, albeit of a communist, the dictatorship of a minority, albeit a communist minority, which would be leading the mass of workers into communism. Now, this, Martov pointed out, this was a view of pre-Marxian communists such as Gracchus Babeuf at the time of the French Revolution and Auguste Blanqui in France. And to show that this was a view of the Bolshevik, he cited Lenin as saying that if 200,000 proprietors could administer an immense territory in their own interest, 200,000 Bolsheviks would do the same thing in the interests of workers and peasants. But what for Martov made things worse was that the Bolsheviks, once in power, interpreted the word dictatorship in the literal sense as the opposite of democracy, as allowing the untrammeled exercise of power by whoever held it, including, if need be, terror and involving the suppression of freedom of speech, of the press and assembly, and the arbitrary arrest even of non-violent opponents, which is what they did from 1918 on, as Martov knew all too well, because he witnessed this himself and experienced it himself. Now, Martov was not afraid of the term dictatorship of the proletariat. In fact, the Russian Social Democratic Party was the only pre-First World War Social Democrat Party to explicitly include this term in its Declaration of Principles, and this was accepted by the Mensheviks as well as by the Bolsheviks. But Martov didn't see this as being the opposite of democracy, but as being fully compatible with it. And he quoted a comment by Engels that the Paris Commune, which was an ultra-democratic regime elected by universal suffrage, Engels had said that this was an example of the dictatorship of the proletariat. So for Martov, what the term meant was the political rule of the working class, I mean, of the whole working class, of the whole proletariat, not just a minority part of it, which had acquired communist consciousness, which was the Bolshevik position. In fact, Martov saw political democracy as the only possible condition for the dictatorship of the proletariat. And the Bolsheviks, as I said, on the other hand, stood for the literal dictatorship of a minority of the working class over the rest of society and over the rest of the working class. And Martov pointed out that this was quite at variance with the views of Marx and Engels. Now, as I said, up until 1917, both the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks had accepted that Russia was ripe, wasn't ripe for socialism, and that the only way forward would be a bourgeois revolution that would pave the way for the further development of capitalism, so, of course, of the working class as well. Now, when Lenin returned to Russia in April 1917, I mean, he shocked even many Bolsheviks when he declared that the socialist revolution was now on the agenda in Russia. Now, it's clear from the speeches and writings of Bolsheviks at the time that they really did believe that during the period of so-called war communism, which was, I say, from 1918 to 1920-21, that they really believed that they were establishing socialism in Russia. I mean, they talked about abolishing money and that they were inflating the ruble, so that eventually the ruble would become worthless and that would be a gradual transition towards a moneyless society. And Martov knew that this would fail, as in his view, Russia was ripe only for capitalism. And of course he was proved to be right when in 1921 the Bolshevik government was forced to adopt the new economic policy, which Lenin described as the development of capitalism under the control of the proletarian state, which he meant the state controlled by the Bolsheviks. Now, Martov and the Mensheviks didn't disagree with this economic policy, but of course they wanted it to take place under the control of a democratic state. Now, neither Martov nor Lenin lived to see what came next, which was the consolidation of Bolshevik rule under Stalin, the ousting of Trotsky, which was Trotsky getting his comeuppance because he'd been one of the most vociferous defenders, both in practice and intellectually, of literal dictatorship and terror. And then there was also the development of the top layers of the Bolshevik Party into a new privileged state capitalist ruling class, ruling on the basis of the state ownership of industry and exploiting the working class, which was deprived even of elementary means of defence, such as independent trade unions. Now, Getzler begins the last chapter of this book with a two-word paragraph. Martov failed. Well, that's definitely true. But what about Lenin? I mean, he appeared to have succeeded. He succeeded, and his party succeeded in winning and retaining power. But I think there's a hint in Lenin's last articles, were written in 1923, when he was a dying man. He was beginning to have doubts about this, and to suspect that Martov had been right. I mean, in some notes on a book by another Menshevik, Nikolai Sukarnov, Lenin accepted that Russia wasn't culturally ripe for socialism, and asked why couldn't the usual order of evolution be reversed? In other words, a communist minority seizes power and then brings culture to the workers, which was the program of the pre-Marxist or pre-Marxian communists. And this is what Lenin wrote, and this is his last articles. This is the one he wrote in January 17, 1923. Now, you say that civilization is necessary for the building of socialism. Very good. But why could we not first create such prerequisites of civilization in our country as the expulsion of the landlords and the Russian capitalists, and then start moving towards socialism? Where, in what books, have you read that such variations of the customary historical order of events are impermissible or impossible? Now, anybody who studied Marx and knew about the materialist conception of history could have replied. And the reply, of course, is to be found in Marx's preface to the first German edition of Capital. We couldn't get anything more Marxist edition than that. And this is what Marx wrote. And even when a society has got upon the right track for the discovery of the natural laws of its movement, and it is the ultimate aim of this work to lay bare the economic law of motion of modern society, it can neither clear by bold leaps nor remove by legal enactments the obstacles offered by the successive phases of its normal development. So what Marx was saying, you can't do what Lenin was proposing. You know, you have to have capitalism before you can have socialism, and the idea that a minority could seize power and somehow pave the way for socialism before conditions were ripe, well, you couldn't do it, either by bold leaps or legal enactments. So what basically had happened is Lenin had got himself into a hopeless position. I mean, he and the Bolshevik Party had succeeded where Blanqui and the other pre-Marxian communists had not. They did seize power as a communist minority, leading discontented but non-communist masses. But then they found they couldn't do anything to advance the cause of communism. They had to develop capitalism. Now, Martov, in fact, had discovered another article by Marx, had written in 1847. It was a published article, so it was available. It's called The Moralizing Criticism. And this is what Marx wrote, which was again conserved as a reply to that question that Lenin put, was why can't you reverse the normal order of social evolution? This is what Marx wrote. If the proletariat overthrows the political domination of the bourgeoisie, its victory will only be a point in the process of the bourgeois revolution itself, and will serve the cause of the latter by aiding its further development. This happened in 1794, and will happen again as long as the march, the movement of history, will not have elaborated the material factors that create the necessity of putting an end to the bourgeois methods of production, and as a consequence, to the political domination of the bourgeoisie. So basically, given that in Russia the material conditions for eliminating the capitalist mode of production did not exist, the Bolshevik seizure of power in November 1917, in the name of the proletariat, could at best be no more than a point in the process of the bourgeois revolution itself. This is, Martov says this explicitly. Okay, it might have been a bourgeois revolution without the bourgeoisie, and even against the bourgeoisie, but as I said, it didn't take very long, by the mid-20s or the end of the 1920s, for a new bourgeoisie, a red bourgeoisie to develop. So the Bolshevik seizure of power turned out to be another example of what Martov calls transferring the power of a conscious minority supporting itself on an unconscious majority to another minority finding itself in an identical situation. In other words, this was a minority, the Bolshevik seizure of power was the transfer of power from one minority to another. So it wasn't a socialist or a working class a revolution. So I mean, that basically is the Martov's criticism of Lenin and the Bolsheviks. So I said I was going to speak for 20 minutes, so that's it.